I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, with mainstream media depleted, elected officials must stop gatekeeping independent outlets. Also, should Governor Jay Inslee be recalled over his lies about the Climate Commitment Act? Plus, how one Seattle school teacher illustrates the power of teachers' unions.
No, we don't want you guys.
No,
we don't want you.
And AI gives the internet a lesson in moral consistency. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Blue skies. Go ahead, Nicole. Join me.
No, I thought you were going to start singing Blue Christmas.
Blue skies. No, it's been... Did you notice today? We got up. Blue skies.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. If you don't live in the Seattle area, it has been... It not just rained for 2 weeks. It's been like Noah's Ark... End of times, torrential downpour. So it was nice to see a little blue skies today. Speaking of the end of times, though, it is the end of what has been really, I think, a challenging period for mainstream media. You know, they have been depleting at record levels, and really we're seeing what I think are the end results of that. You know, when I was in TV news, we were losing employees like crazy. And it started in earnest during the pandemic, and then it just sped up from there. But, you know, TV salaries had been going down for a long time. Fewer and fewer people wanted to get into the profession. If you're a journalist at a news publication, you're probably not making much money. And I think what the pandemic did is just a couple things. It opened up people's eyes to, gosh, life is short. I don't need to be this miserable and make that little money. But also, you know, it hurt the bottom line of some of the big news entities. And so you had layoffs and consolidations, et cetera. But then there was also people like me who realized, hey, you know, I could do this job on my own from my house if I wanted to, because we were doing the news. We were doing the morning news from our living room, something we never thought imaginable. And so I think it opened up a lot of people's eyes to there are so many other options if what you care about is truly journalism and media, where you don't have to be tied to some big corporate entity. But the end result of that is the mainstream media, not only in Washington State, but across the country, is absolutely depleted. And you've seen this rise of independent outlets. One of the concerning aspects of that, however, is a real patchwork in how elected officials are willing, I guess, to consider independent outlets as legitimate news sources. We've covered this on this show before. I did a lengthy public records request, you guys might recall, and we did some exclusive reporting that centered around our friend Jonathan Cho, how he, once he left Como News, started working for Discovery Institute. There were all these entities, the city of Seattle, the King County Executive's Office, the governor's office, who were blatantly icing him out. So here you have this guy who just got out of a long career in mainstream media, asks good, pertinent journalistic questions, but because he had a tie to a think tank in Discovery Institute, they said, no, you can't come in. But the question is, and this became very obvious yesterday, so you'll remember that Governor Jay Inslee had a press conference yesterday that was a huge opportunity for the media to ask him about some of the negative news stories surrounding his Climate Commitment Act. I mean, there were hundreds of questions you could have asked the governor that were hard-hitting and relevant, and so we're sitting here watching it. There were only three reporters who asked questions. And there might have been additional people in the room, but there were only three reporters who asked questions, and then they took a fourth question from the same reporter who asked the first question. So that told me there are only three reporters in the room who are interested in asking questions. And we have seen this at significant news events where there are a handful, sometimes only one or two reporters in the room, even when it's someone like Governor Jay Inslee. And I'll bring up, you know, a key question that no one asked him about of the reporters who were there yesterday. They didn't ask him about the WashDOT whistleblower. They didn't ask him about the state employee, former state employee, who says he chose to resign rather than lie about the impact that Governor Jay Inslee's Climate Commitment Act would have on gas prices. That's a huge story. It's one of the biggest stories of the year. And that's an opportunity to ask Governor Jay Inslee, who was dodging the King 5 investigative reporter who did that story, that's a great opportunity to be there and to ask him that question. Didn't happen. Now, at the same time that there were just a couple reporters at this very, very critical event where there was an opportunity to ask critical questions of the man in charge of our entire state, there were explicitly efforts to keep independent journalists out of the room. One of those journalists, we found out, being our friend, Jonathan Cho. So Jonathan Cho took to Twitter after this event and says he was not allowed to go. Jamie Smith, who's the governor's communications director, she said in an email to him, "Good afternoon. There's been no change in our media and credential policy, including the provision regarding people employed by think tank organizations. The climate preview will be streamed on TVW, and we're happy, as always, to answer questions." Meaning if Jonathan wanted to, he could send them some emailed questions that they could then mull over and respond to him. And you may recall in our previous investigative reporting that we've done on this, where we looked at all these emails that these government entities were sending back and forth to try to keep Jonathan out, at one point physically blocking him from entering a press conference in the case of King County Executive Dow Constantine. They decided that they were going to adopt a media policy that was put together by the Capitol Correspondents Association. So the Capitol Correspondents Association are reporters who cover the legislature in Olympia. However, it's still a thing, but it is a tiny fraction of what it once was. There used to be 20-plus reporters dedicated to covering the state legislature. Now there's, what, two or three? And so you have really an outdated entity in the Capitol Correspondents Association with outdated rules that haven't caught up to the times of where media has come in the last few years. And the governor's office chooses... It's their choice, by the way. They don't have to follow rules given to them by the Capitol Correspondents Association. The governor's office chooses to use those rules because it precludes people like Jonathan, people like me, people like maybe the Center Square, which is ridiculous because they do exceptional reporting, people like some of the individuals who work for the Washington Policy Center, but who do reporting. I mean, Todd Myers, who has broken some of the biggest stories related to environmental issues and the governor's failure on climate policies, they choose the set of rules that allows them to keep those people out, and I would argue allows them to keep out people who are going to ask the hardest questions. So the real, I think, question for you is, are you okay with that level of gatekeeping? And I do understand that it can get a little bit dicey if the governor's office says, everyone's welcome, you know, neighborhood blog, whatever it is, anyone, someone who just, you know, tweets and thinks that makes them a journalist, like, come on in. I understand that you want to have some structure in place so it doesn't become a free-for-all. But when you're looking at individuals like Jonathan Cho, who by any stretch of the imagination is producing meaningful journalistic content, whose questions are relevant and fact-based, I don't see how anyone could argue that that is a member of the media. So the question is, what happens when there are no more acceptable journalists to go to these press conferences? What happens when there are no mainstream reporters available to go to these press conferences because their news departments are so thin that they just simply didn't have a warm body to send that day? Then the governor gets asked no questions? And people like Jonathan Cho, who surely would have questions on behalf of the citizens of Washington State, continues to be blocked? What happens if Bob Ferguson is the next governor? Do you really think that he is going to divert from this policy that Governor Jay Inslee has been following? Do you really think Bob Ferguson is going to open up his press conferences to people like Jonathan Cho, to people like us, to people like Center Square, to the independent outlets who, yes, they might have a think tank affiliation, or they might have funding that comes from politically aligned organizations, but who say that their journalists are maintaining editorial control? It's no different than the Seattle Times. The Seattle Times has multiple specific reporting projects that are funded by politically aligned organizations and people. They have Project Homelessness, who I think is funded by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and a bevy of other left-leaning people. And what the Seattle Times says is it makes it clear, hey, this work is being supported by XYZ. We maintain editorial control. Okay, then that doesn't bother me. If the Times is saying we maintain editorial control, I look at that as no different as Jonathan Cho working for Discovery Institute, but maintaining editorial control over his content. So this is really troublesome stuff, because especially now, and I'm going to get to our Daily Show poll, which to me speaks to the seriousness of some of the things that Governor Jay Inslee has been doing and concealing and lying about. So when you're in a time like this, when you've got a governor who should be under immense scrutiny for some of the things that he said and done, and they conveniently are able to block out, using outdated rules, people who they know will press him on those issues. And then you've got 2024, which is going to be a critical year for this state. For the first time in 12 years, people here are going to have a chance to elect a brand new governor. And at the same time, the media is just in the toilet. Are they going to ask the candidates the questions that need to be asked? This is very worrisome stuff. And the gatekeeping, if you have elected leaders who truly care about the First Amendment, about a free press, about the ability of journalists, whether they're independent or work for a mainstream outlet, to be able to get valuable critical information on behalf of the people those elected officials serve, then the gatekeeping has to stop. And there has to be a demand on both the left and the right that these rules are reworked in a way that allows elected leaders to be faced with the scrutiny that they should be faced with. One of the things that's really bothered me about all of this is that the mainstream media, silent when this stuff happens. Silent. You think the Seattle Times, King 5, Cairo, Como, Q13, you think they're standing up for Jonathan Cho? You think they're going to stand up for us to get access? You think that they're going to stand up for Center Square, for Washington Policy Center to get access? Of course they're not. One, because they're ideologically so far to the left that they don't want some of these elected officials criticized. But two, we're hurting their bottom line. Why do you think Nicole and I can do this job full time? Why do you think that we can do an independent podcast that I started out of the spare bedroom of a house and be able to at least make enough money that we both can do it full time? Why do you think that is? It's because people are desperate for an alternative to what mainstream media has become. So when you have a successful alternative like this one, there's no way in hell the mainstream media is going to stick up for us. When you have Jonathan Cho absolutely dominating the homelessness beat, breaking stories left and right, taking over Seattle social media, you think they're going to stick up for Jonathan Cho? No, because it's all about the money for them. They don't. If King, Cairo, Como, Crosscut, Seattle Times, Stranger, if they cared about the First Amendment, if they cared about holding elected officials in this state accountable, if that is really what they cared about, which I hope it would be because they're journalists, right? Well, not the Stranger. Did I mention the Stranger? They're not journalists. But I still think the Stranger should have access to press conferences, right? I don't care if they put out reporting that is entirely slanted. That doesn't bother me. They have every right to be there. And I have fought for other outlets. We've been morally consistent on this issue, but it shows you those newsrooms care about their bottom line and their own egos. They don't like to see independent outlets doing well, making them irrelevant. So they're not going to stand up for the First Amendment. They're not going to stand up for you and what you deserve, which is a robust media environment where elected officials like Jay Inslee are held accountable and where people like Jonathan Cho are allowed to hold him accountable. All right, speaking of Governor Jay Inslee's press conference yesterday, so on the show, and on Twitter before the show, I said that it was one of the most horrifying things I've seen the governor do. Just shameless. He's asked, one of the four questions that he got asked was about what he would say to people who are supporting the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. People who are concerned that that is taxing those who can least afford it. Rather than answer the question, which was a legitimate question, what did he do? Gathered up the children to use them as political pawns.
Well, let me show you, instead of telling you, let me show you what I would say to those people. Why don't all you kids come on up here? Can you guys come on up here? That's a pretty good question. What would I say to those people who want to allow the oil and gas industry to pollute to their heart's content for as many years as they want and put their toxic gases into the atmosphere of the state of Washington? What would I say to them? What I would say to them if these kids, when they're 72 years of age, like I am, will have a Washington state where there's some trees that haven't burned down, where they can breathe because forest fire smoke is not ruining their lungs, where their mom and dad got little help financially with their utility bills, where they can drive, get to on a school bus that's electric and drive for free. What I would say to them, these kids deserve those things.
First of all, totally set aside that some of the stuff he's saying makes no sense. I mean, a majority of the forest fires here are human caused, and there are a lot of reasons why they get so bad, like our failure to properly care for our forests and clear them, etc. All that aside, I said that it was shameful, and I called it gross, that his response to a legitimate question is to gather, what, 6, 7 year olds? They looked like the kids who don't even know what he's talking about. They were just told by an adult to come there and hold a sign. Right? To gather them in front of him was literal blocks between him and the reporter, and then use them to manipulate your emotions into forgetting what the question was even about, something the governor has done before. We played examples of it yesterday.
They probably can't even read
the kids,
the signs that they're holding.
Like, what is this?
They're
like,
very little. Down.
So anyway, the center, our friends at the Center Square, which God bless them for this, they reached out to the governor's office to ask about my assertion that this is Inslee using these kids as political pawns. Bravo, Center Square. Who else would do that? That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. The Center Square, why they're like, oh, you can't come into our press conferences. Why? Because they'll ask questions like that. The article says, in answering a question from a member of the media about the carbon tax impacting those who can least afford it, Inslee brought up several of the children in attendance before answering the question by railing against fossil fuel companies for polluting the air and saying he would do something about that. Undivided podcast journalist Brandi Cruz took to X to accuse Inslee of bringing up little kids to use as political pawns. The Center Square reached out to the governor's office for a response to Cruz's take, and this is what Mike Folk, the governor's press secretary, said. It was heartwarming. Of course, the governor's press secretary would say that Governor Inslee using tiny children who couldn't even comprehend the signs they were holding to avoid answering a hard question was heartwarming. If that warms your heart, that's disturbing. Okay. Speaking of Governor Jay Inslee, and you know, we've been hard on him lately, I think deservedly so. He is the governor, and they've been doing a lot of shady things when it comes to the Climate Commitment Act. And the latest shady thing is holding what amounted to a campaign event to misrepresent the state's record when it comes to climate issues. And so the subject of our daily subscriber poll over on Patreon and Locals was kind of a doozy, but somebody has to start this conversation. I said, do you believe there are grounds to initiate a recall against Governor Jay Inslee? And the RCW on recalls, it allows for it basically, and obviously it has to be, you know, legally sound. You can't just come up with any reason to recall someone, but you're looking at misfeasance or malfeasance. Misfeasance means the performance of a duty in an improper manner, and malfeasance in office means the commission of an unlawful act, or you violate the oath of office, meaning the neglect or knowing failure of an elected public officer to perform faithfully a duty imposed by law. I mean, I would say for sure, misfeasance. The performance of a duty in an improper manner. When you look at collectively the lies around the Climate Commitment Act and what it would do to gas prices, and specifically if you can show that the whistleblower from WashDOT who had come out and said, hey, this is going to raise gas prices as much as 50 cents. Did the governor know about that? And did he continue to go out and lie to the public about something so serious? That is the key, right? And so I asked subscribers, do you think there's a grounds for a recall? On Patreon, I made it a little more specific. The options I gave you was yes, no, or yes, but it would be fruitless, which I think it's kind of where I fall. Like, look, do I think that if there's a recall initiated against the governor, that you'd find a judge who isn't ideologically aligned, who'd sign off on it? Do I think that he would actually be kicked out of office in the 1 year that he has left? Probably not. Street says, I'd like to see how Ferguson will have to publicly support and lie for Inslee during a recall attempt. Let's expose Bob's crooked left agenda prior to the election. Steve says, we're better off dragging him through the mud for the next 11 months than pursuing a recall effort that would make him a victim. Look, I don't know that it would make him a victim. Maybe I'm sure he can spin it like that. But in terms of dragging him through the mud, he put himself in the mud. You know, we're just We're just showing people, hey, look at him thrashing around in the mud. I do agree that for the next 11 months, we need to make it painfully clear that Governor Jay Inslee has taken these issues into the mud, and that's where he's operating from. Mike D says, fruitless effort with no real impact, like impeaching without a conviction, just a waste of money and time. Matthew Cook says, I voted yes. However, there are particular benchmarks for a dereliction of duty that need to be met. Or you said, however, are there? Yes. And if you look in the poll where I posted it, it takes you to the law on the issue if you want to read through it. Weisscastle says, obvious that you can, but it failed by a wide margin with Newsom in California. And I have no doubt it would fail here. And we all pay the money for the effort. Not worth it. But I do think it is worth saying that Governor Jay Inslee, his actions have been egregious enough that if this were the beginning of his term, that a recall would be absolutely warranted against him. I think it's important for people to truly understand how serious this pattern of concealment has been around the Climate Commitment Act. All right, coming up next, a crazy, unbelievable segment. I will tell you what, this one teacher in the Seattle School District is a prime example of why it is so difficult to fire teachers. If this teacher can't be fired, no teacher in the Seattle Public School District can be fired. We'll get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. It is an unbelievable series of events with this teacher dating back to 2020. But first, if you are in the market for new insurance, or maybe you just need to reevaluate, like, hey, it's a new year, we got to tighten our budget up a little bit, or maybe we need more insurance. That was the case for Mike and I in the spring as we prepared to get married. We were really underinsured and we knew it. So I'd heard about the First Mark challenge for years on the radio, so we decided to take it. And it was great. I mean, the process definitely took us a couple hours total. But what we got out of it is awesome. We got much better insurance for the same price, which is a no-brainer, complete win. And then First Mark is proactively every year looking at ways to save us money, looking to make sure that our insurance needs are up to date, given where our lives are at. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he says, you know, a lot of people start the process because they do want to save a little money, but it's not just price that matters. The service they offer matters too.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate, and it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, 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 right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah. No. And the answer is no.
No, we can't, okay? No. Yeah, no, you can't, but it's going to pay you off. That time investment we had on the front end, imagine how much time we're going to save every year when they do that for us. When we don't have to sit and wonder, hey, do we have the best insurance possible? Do we have the best price? They're doing that work in the background for us. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Sign up for the First Mark Challenge. Set a little time aside, maybe before the first of the year as you reevaluate your family budget, firstmarkinsurance.com. I'll also say, maybe I'll say this now, Nicole. I don't even know if I've told you this. All of our undivided sponsors are sticking with us in 2024.
Woohoo.
High five. We really, I mean, as much as we rely on those of you who pay $5 a month for the podcast, which we absolutely appreciate, the consistency of the funding that we get from sponsors helps us plan better, I think, and know sort of in the long term how much money we have to operate and to mm-hmm. grow. You don't want to be on camera today, Nicole?
Well, I can be. Why not? I know you're going to hang out talking about this for a while.
Well, I just think it's important that people know, you know, we obviously rely on the subscriptions to be able to continue mm-hmm. to do this, but 2024 is a huge year. We're looking to obviously expand some of our political coverage around the elections, around the legislative session. So having all of our sponsors stay intact in 2024 is really meaningful. So now is a really good time to show them that you appreciate that by
doing business with them. And they're just good people. They're all just really good people.
And we love them.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. I just, you know, if we're going to hear you, we might as well see you. Okay. You're so good looking, you know?
Oh, that's precious.
You're bringing in viewers for us.
Yeah.
That's really why I hired you. Trying to get in, trying to bring in viewers. Let's be honest. No, I'm kidding. All right. An ethnic studies world history teacher in the Seattle Public School District is making headlines for multiple reasons this week. And it is a pattern of behavior that goes all the way back to 2020. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, I first learned about Ian Golash back in 2020. So Ian Golash is an ethnic studies world history teacher, which is kind of interesting because he's white. They let a white teacher teach ethnic studies? Wow. Is that like extra woke? Like it goes beyond woke to like very woke? At Chief Sealth International High School in Seattle. He is also the chair of the school's social studies department. He is also the school's union rep for the Seattle Education Association. And this will be relevant later on, but you'll remember that the Seattle Education Association recently passed a pro-Hamas resolution. So yeah, he's the representative for his school to the Seattle Education Association. So I mentioned that I first learned the name Ian Golash back in 2020, because at the time, our friend Jonathan Cho was a reporter for Como News. I feel like he'll be okay with me saying this. I don't think it violates any sort of things. But so at the time this happened, before I play the video, Jonathan was at Como and I was at Fox 13. And I had a lot of leeway at Fox 13 for the most part to kind of pursue stories that maybe others in the TV news environment weren't pursuing. And Jonathan Cho had been covering a protest of students at the King County Jail, where some students, when they should have been at school, actually were going into the King County Jail to protest, and they were being led by a teacher. Now, Jonathan Cho ended up taking cell phone video that he gave to me to do a story about it, because for some reason, Como News wouldn't let him do a story focusing on the actions of that teacher. So I did it at the time. I want to play, we'll play just a short video clip of what we ended up airing at the time on Fox 13, but it was shot by our friend Jonathan Cho back in September of 2020.
While claiming...
Hey, do you want Cairo?
Cairo, filming. Keep an eye on the man
with
the pink
hair. No, we don't want you guys.
No, Cairo.
We don't want you.
I'm not Cairo, bro.
You don't have permission to use none of that.
No, Cairo. Bye. We don't want it.
So you have a news crew that's coming up to a government building, a taxpayer-owned building, to document a protest that students are holding in that building, the King County Jail. The man, if you're watching, in the pink hair, who sees the news crews approaching, pokes his head in to ask the students, hey, do you want the news here? They say no. So what does he do? What does that teacher do? A teacher who's there with his students. He turns around and he puts his hand in the to block the camera. And immediately his action in doing that leads to further harassment of the news crew that feels like it has to leave. So here you have this adult figure who is with these students who've barged into the King County Jail. So clearly the adult is not giving them a good example of how they should behave. And then the adult is asking the kids, hey, do you want the free press here? You're in a government building. Do you want us to tell the free press to leave? And when they say yes, because they're kids, we don't want them here, he puts his hand in the face of the camera. And after that, students start yelling at the news crew. We cut the video short, but dropping F-bombs at the news crew. You got one young kid, clearly doesn't know how the media works, says, you don't have permission to use my likeness. Okay, you don't need permission. So at the time, you know, I recall reaching out to and finding out who this teacher was, Ian Golash. And I reached out to him, and he said, I have no interest in talking to you. I reached out to the school district at the time, and we did a larger story about this activism streak that teachers were on, and I thought it was made even worse by the fact that he was there encouraging this behavior by the students he is supposed to be an example for. So anyway, we do this story in 2020. Three plus years go by. Who is resurfacing this week in the Seattle media? So Ian Golash has now this week been the subject of two blockbuster reports, one from our friend Jason Rance. Jason Rance's story at MyNorthwest.com, Seattle student failed quiz for saying men can't get pregnant. Jason writes, an activist teacher failed a Seattle student on a quiz for saying only women can get pregnant and that only men have pee-pees. A 10th grade ethnic studies world history teacher at Chief Sealth International High School in Seattle gave students a quiz titled Understanding Gender Versus Sex. The quiz provided a series of statements to be labeled true or false, or questions with multiple choice. Question 4 was a true or false question with the statement, all men have penises. The student labeled the statement true, since it is in fact true. But the teacher penalized the answer, marking it incorrect. Similarly, question 7 was a true or false question with the statement, only women can get pregnant. Again, the student marked the statement true because only women can get pregnant. Again, the teacher penalized the student, insisting the answer is false. So failing this student on that quiz for being biologically accurate in his answers to the questions that were posed. The teacher's name, Ian Golosh. I would also note that that particular quiz has no relevance to the class he is supposed to be teaching, which is Ethnic Studies World History. Although in the story that Jason Rance did, Seattle Public Schools defended Ian Golosh and defended his decision to give this particular quiz to students, which is wild. So now that story in and of itself and Ian Golosh's history of actually participating in protests with his students and harassing newsgroups, that would be enough, right? I think either of those on their own make him unfit to be a role model or to be teaching kids. But it gets worse. Much worse. So our friend Ari Hoffman sees Jason Rance's story, and he decides to look deeper into this teacher, Ian Golosh. And he finds out a couple things. That one, outside this teacher's classroom and inside the classroom, he has what can only be characterized as pro-Hamas propaganda posters. One of them actually depicting a Hamas terrorist. And then Ari looked at his Facebook page. On November 27th, here's what Ian Golosh posted. This is what I understand. Correct me if I'm wrong with evidence, please. On October 7th, Hamas didn't behead anyone. Hamas didn't rape anyone. The bodies found charred beyond recognition were made that way either by Israeli tanks, missiles, or helicopter gunships. Hamas soldiers were not carrying weapons that could do that kind of damage to human bodies. A body looks very different once it's been vaporized by a Hellfire missile or an explosive tank round as opposed to being set on fire with, say, gasoline. Israel, operating under the Hannibal Directive, chose to obliterate Israeli civilians, including at least one child, in their efforts to kill Hamas militants. I'm just trying to get it straight for myself. I don't know how into the weeds y'all are on this. Also, F Hamas, F Israel, I'm a communist. So here you have this teacher, who again, he's the school's representative to the Seattle Education Association, a teachers union that passed what really was a anti-Israel, pro-Hamas resolution. So perhaps not a surprise that he's on his personal Facebook page denying outright Hamas atrocities, blaming some of the worst atrocities against Israelis on Israel. I think what's more shocking is the posters that he has up saying free Gaza, solidarity with Palestine, Palestine will be free. A little more shocking that in a school environment, those posters would be allowed. But it gets even worse. So if you look at Ian Golosh's Facebook page, his profile picture right now is graffiti that has the anarchist symbol and says, abolition is my love language. Great. So now you've got a teacher openly advocating for the abolition of police and openly affiliating himself with anarchists. Could it get worse? I guess it could get worse. You guys might recall during the summer of 2020, protesters tried to shut down Interstate 5 in Seattle. And the reason this particular protest, out of all the protests and riots that happened this summer, was covered so much in the media is because there was a wrong-way driver who tried to get around this closure of the interstate that was done by protesters. He ended up striking two protesters and killing them. And so, did he kill one or two? Did they both die? I mean, it's a sad thing, right?
Right, yeah.
They put themselves in a very dangerous situation by shutting down a freeway. But at the end of the day, they were struck by a car that was driving the wrong way. So I'm not trying to diminish the loss of life there. But after what happened, there was a lawsuit filed against the city of Seattle, the state of Washington, and King County. It was filed on behalf of, it says, complaint for damages on behalf of Black Lives Matter protesters for wrongful death, personal injuries, civil rights violations, and Public Records Act violations. And it listed a bunch of plaintiffs. And one of the plaintiffs is Ian Golash, which suggests that he was on the interstate that night, taking part in that protest. So this is, I think it was just one of
them.
One
died.
One, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is a clear pattern from this teacher that by any reasonable stretch makes him unfit to teach kids. Going back to 2020, and you really think that the very first time he'd engaged in something like that was when it was caught on camera? No. But going back to 2020, facilitating a protest where students barged into the King County Jail, harassing news crews and blocking cameras, giving the okay to students to continue to harass those news crews, which that should have resulted in his termination right there. But no, schools don't care about the First Amendment. They care about the First Amendment of their kids who should be in school, but instead are protesting at the King County Jail. But they don't care about the First Amendment rights of the news crews because clearly he kept his job. So you fast forward, he's giving kids in an ethnic studies world history class quizzes about whether only women can get pregnant and failing kids who answer biologically correct, but who fail to answer in the ideological way that he wants them to answer. And then you have a teacher who, again, and this is what I think about this guy. Guaranteed. This is someone who is an activist in his glory days, and he's trying to relive his glory days through these kids and trying to be their best friend and their comrade, you know, in protest. That's what he's trying to do. And so he's hanging up pro-Hamas signs in a public school that your tax money is paying for, where kids should be learning. Think about his post that he made about Hamas, dismissing, I mean, this is conspiracy level stuff. What do you think he's telling kids in their class? What do you think he's telling kids in school about Israel? If you're a Jewish kid who attends that school, can you imagine how uncomfortable that would be? To know that your teacher said Hamas didn't behead anyone, Hamas didn't rape anyone, Israeli tanks did these things. Can you imagine for Jewish students the uncomfortable environment that created, not to mention that the Teachers Union for Seattle came up with a pro-Hamas resolution, which is bad enough. But this right here is the power of teachers' unions. If this is a guy who can't get fired, I don't know what it would take to get fired as a teacher in the Seattle Public School District. The fact that Seattle Public Schools is defending this weird quiz he gave to students that he failed them on based on his political ideology. The fact that he's still today in a classroom, not only teaching a 10th grade class, but he chairs their entire social studies department. This person doesn't belong anywhere near children because he's not a good role model, because he teaches based on ideology, and because he is clearly a crazy conspiracy theorist, all of which are reasons to not have him in a public school. But do you think for one second, given all of this information that came out this week, given what happened back in 2020, that Seattle Public Schools is going to can this guy? Not a chance in hell. All right, we are going to follow up on a story we told you about a state lawmaker going all the way to Finland to learn about how to prevent traffic fatalities. But first, we've been talking about the state of the real estate market, but also what's going on for small landlords. Seattle has some really strict policies that protect tenants, but don't do anything for landlords except make their life more difficult. And then in Tacoma, voters just passed Measure 1, which will have even more strict rules for landlords. Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com, not only obviously is he a real estate agent, but he is a small landlord who has units in Tacoma. And he said, man, this is a really tough time for people like him.
We continue to see
more and more aggressive landlord-tenant laws being passed in favor of the tenant rights. Like you go down to Tacoma, mm-hmm. we are practically back at those, you know, COVID anti-eviction restrictions with what they have passed down there if you really want to jump through the hoops and work the system. Except what's not available right now is the help for landlords should one of those people choose not to pay. And I'm saying choose not to pay because there are plenty of people who are choosing not to pay. It's not that they can't, they choose not to.
Yeah, so he said only time will tell whether you have some of these small landlords who decide just to sell their units in Tacoma. We'll have to see how that Measure One plays out. But he said for him, you know, when he looks at his units down there, he is really thinking about diversifying, maybe selling some of them. So if you're a landlord and you're in that position, reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Not only can he help you if you do decide to move forward with selling the units that you have, but he's also in it with you too. So maybe you guys can commiserate and talk about the best path forward. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, there was a group of Washington state lawmakers, kind of a coalition that was in Finland. And I do believe it was actually like both. I think there was Democrats and Republicans. I don't think it was just Democrats.
Oh, they're there right now.
Well,
right
they're still there?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. But anyway, so it's not just State Senator Marco Elias. However, he has been sort of the ringleader of this. And he's been very vocal about the need to travel all the way to Finland to figure out why Finland is doing so well when it comes to traffic fatalities when Washington State is not. So he took to Twitter yesterday and he gave people an update from Finland, I guess. He said, we heard from researchers who studied automated speed enforcement across a variety of roadway types over the last two decades here. The main takeaways, there was huge decreases in excessive speeding. Fatalities decreased by 1/4. Effects were seen beyond just the camera location. He said experts at the Finnish Traffic Safety Council had lots of data to share about Finland's decades-long journey to reduce fatalities. Overall, the last decade has seen a gradual decline in Finland versus an alarming rise in Washington. Finland also implements lower wintertime speed limits, recognizing weather conditions reduce safety. Data shows this has reduced crashes and fatalities. Here's what my question is, and this goes for any government official who was on this trip. What did you learn there that you could not have learned here? What did you learn there that you could not have done a few Zoom meetings, read a little PowerPoint presentation, and learned from Washington State to help save a little money? I tend to think this was just because you had some people who really wanted to go to Finland.
I think so. I mean, of all the topics, too.
Of all the topics. I also think, and one of the reasons we've covered this on the show is because it bothers me that you have an outright denial of the things that you have done, Senator Marco Elias, to make the conditions on our roadways worse. When you look at the law that made it almost impossible for police to pursue violent criminals, you look at the conditions around crime and law and order and some of the fatalities that has led to on our roadways. And you don't want to acknowledge at all that that might be contributing to the environment in Washington State when it comes to traffic fatalities. I don't think, you know, the things he talks about that Finland is doing. I'm happy to have conversations about how to, of course, want to decrease traffic deaths. Yeah. You don't have to go to Finland to learn from them. And also, Washington State is much different than Finland. I don't know that we're really comparing apples to apples there.
That's my issue with it.
I
all of these graphs, nothing makes sense for us. So.
Right. How can you get those statistics comparable in a way where we can actually learn something from them? You know, based on population, based on the way that people commute, mm-hmm. based on the size and geographical space that they're commuting within. Just because it works in Finland doesn't mean it's going to work here. So it's a waste of money. It's not apples to apples. It's stuff you could have learned about on a PowerPoint presentation that was emailed to you without spending a bunch of taxpayer money to go over there. I'll also point out one of the things that Senator Leah said when he was being criticized for bragging about this trip that they were going to take to Finland. Well, we're all stuck here. He goes, this is an old tweet. I'm excited to visit Finland with colleagues from our state to get inspired to reduce traffic fatalities. You have to travel thousands of miles mm-hmm. to get inspired to reduce mm-hmm. traffic fatalities. He goes, response from the MAGA right and Seattle left has been virulent. So I guess if the extremes hate the idea of learning from others, it must be a great idea. No, it's not a great idea. And I don't know who this MAGA right is. I don't know why the Seattle left was so mad about it. But the MAGA right is just kind of non-existent. So if somebody's criticizing, again, this goes with one party rule and how they feel Teflon. And they're like, oh, you can't criticize anything that we do. So people have legitimate criticisms about what we just laid out, saying, hey, you don't need to spend all this money on a trip to Finland because you could just get a PowerPoint presentation or read a study that they did on how they reduce traffic fatalities and see if any of it's relevant to Washington State before you even think about going over there. But oh no, if you said something like that, you're either a mega right-wing extremist and you're just angry because he wants to learn from other people. Give me a freaking break. Give me a break.
Yeah, it's. He also learned that if you lower the blood alcohol limit, that could save some lives too.
Oh yeah. Oh, and if you lower the speed limit. You mean that if I'm driving 30 miles an hour, it's less dangerous than if I'm driving 100?
Go figure.
I learn something new every day. You know what? I'm going to slow down when I when I hit the roadways heading back home today.
And I will say, I don't think that it's terrible for people to go meet in person to discuss things. If it's relevant and if it makes somewhat, like if you're really going to do something here that makes sense here, as much sense as it does here as it does in Finland, more power to you. Go talk to them, figure out how they implemented it. But there is absolutely no correlation between the two places. Washington and Finland are not going to share anything that you can really transfer. I mean, you can try to lower the blood alcohol limit, things like that, but that is not necessary of a trip. And I'm all for perks of jobs. Like some cool things that you get to do because you have a cool job. Like I'm for that.
Not taxpayer funded perks.
That's the only reason to that was always my thing, is I was always gonna have a job with good perks, and I did that. And but I think that's a thing that entices people to take jobs. You know, I mean, Facebook feeds them lunch, Amazon gives them whatever, like parties.
This is taxpayer money.
I understand, but I'm okay with them going somewhere to meet with somebody if it makes sense.
Yes.
But this doesn't make sense.
No, if you're the president of the United States and you need to go meet face to face with world leaders, I get that. Yeah. I get that you don't want to have a Zoom with Vladimir Putin, right? Like, you need to go, you need to shake his hand, you need to fall asleep next to him while the media's hands are asking you questions. But
some people might rather Zoom.
A Washington State senator does not need to go all the way to Finland to learn about how to reduce traffic fatalities. Mm-hmm. You don't need to get any FaceTime with anyone. I'm sure you're getting a lot of holiday shopping in and some nice pictures for the old Facebook, though. Good for you. All right. Today and tomorrow on the show, we want to tease an event that's coming up on Thursday. I will be there. Nicole's like, I might come.
I'm going to try to make it.
She's trying to get out of something else. But I thought it's an event that would really speak to our audience. And so we want to make sure that we tell you about it. It is an event with The Dispatch, which is an independent news publication that looks at issues around politics, social issues from a center-right perspective. And so the Jonah Goldberg and Kevin Williamson of The Dispatch are going to have a meet and greet this Thursday, 6 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency Bellevue. And so you're certainly welcome to attend. Tickets are just $15. Kevin Williamson was nice enough to come on and talk with us a little bit about what The Dispatch is all about. You guys say about The Dispatch that your coverage of these issues, politics, policy, culture, informed by conservative principles. I feel like more and more, I'm not even sure what conservative principles are. So what are conservative principles to you?
So we are for things like the rule of law and constitutional government and free trade and sensible fiscal policies and a sensible foreign policy and that kind of thing. I tend to be a little skeptical of rigid ideological positions. You know, when someone comes to a question and they say, well, what does my ideology tell me what I have to think about this? I think it's the wrong way to go about it. Not to say that people don't develop philosophies and ideological preferences over time. Of course, they do. That's part of what experience does to you. You don't come to every problem de novo. You know, it's not a new day every day. You're not a goldfish. But I tend to want to look at the world as a series of discrete and particular problems and challenges, some of which have things in common with things we've seen in the past, which is where we get experience in philosophy and kind of political ideologies come from. But if your job in life, as you see it, is servicing your ideology rather than trying to deal with the actual thing that's in front of you, then I think that's where you've gone wrong with an ideology.
Yeah, when you talk about conservatism, and if we look at the current state of the Republican Party and Trump as the front runner for the presidential election, what are some things that you think Republicans have adopted, some, you know, policy prescriptions or stances that you feel like are contrary to conservatism?
Sure. The anti-trade stuff is a big thing. The abandonment of even any pretense of fiscal restraint is a big thing. I mean, Republicans never did a particularly good job on the fiscal stuff, but now that they've just kind of given it up and, you know, really embraced welfare statism, particularly, you know, welfare statism for relatively affluent elderly white people, you know, Medicare and Social Security and things like that, which tend to benefit those people more than most other demographics. It developed some pretty, I think, bad and lazy attitudes toward national defense. I am sympathetic to some of the less hawkish approaches to foreign policy on the right, and people who are skeptical of the size and expense and expansiveness of our military apparatus and our engagements around the world. I don't think that's inherently a bad point of view. There's something to be said for it, but it's easy to make too much of it, I think. And again, it's letting your ideology run away with you. So when you see Russia starting the first real war in Europe in a very long time, and the American right found itself sort of intellectually paralyzed by what to do about this, because on the one hand, they have this long legacy of wanting to respond to that sort of aggression in an aggressive sort of way. And on the other hand, you've got a bunch of, you know, kind of lily-livered Republicans in Congress saying, well, what's Tucker Carlson going to say about me tonight if I do this? Because there is a sort of cult of Putin at some parts of the right. You know, a lot of the negative attitudes toward Ukraine and Zelensky is a Nazi and all this ridiculous stuff you hear from certain Republicans is not based on, you know, kind of Ron Paul style non-interventionism. It's based on admiration for Putin and for what Putin has done in Russia and a desire to have a similar kind of aggressively nationalistic project in the United States. The fact that people are ashamed to admit that doesn't make it any less true, or any less obviously true.
So again, Kevin Williamson and Jonah Goldberg of The Dispatch are going to be in Bellevue, the Hyatt Regency. I will be there as well. They're going to talk about some local political issues and respond to some of that, and also what's happening nationally and internationally. So if you're watching the show right now, regardless of where you're watching it, I just posted a link in the comments where you can sign up to attend, and I hope to see you there. And Nicole, I hope to see you there too. Don't make me go alone. We all know Mike's not coming. He works too much.
I'll ask Santa if he can reschedule.
Yeah, Santa, if you could just take a breather. Really quick, I just got to fit something in quick because it just came through on my inbox and it's making me just ever so happy. And we'll talk about it more tomorrow because I don't have anything to put up. I just got an email from the Senate Republican Caucus. They have introduced a bill, Senate Bill 5820, to help protect initiative gatherers, which is an issue we care so much about. I'm so glad to see this. So I haven't had an opportunity to dive right into it, but the bill itself, the language of it is pretty short. It says, no person may publicly protest another person collecting signatures for or signing any initiative or referendum petition within 25 feet of the person collecting signatures or the person signing or attempting to sign any initiative or referendum petition. And I think that that's appropriate. I almost would like to see it 50 feet, but 25 feet, that gives you a buffer. That's all you really need, right? You need, so thank you, Senators Wilson and Patton, who put that forth in the Senate, and Senate Majority Leader John Braun. That's all you really need. Look, it protects people's First Amendment rights. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have a right to push back against an initiative that you don't agree with. Of course you do. But to stand within feet of a table where someone is trying to have a conversation with a Washington voter about whether they want to sign an initiative, which is their right, which is part of the democratic process, it is highly intimidating. We have witnessed it. It's highly intimidating to do so when someone else is yelling at you not to sign it. So we need a buffer space. I think 25 feet is very reasonable. I think it's a good start. I hope that's something along those lines that the Secretary of State might support. And surely Democrats who are so concerned about our democracy would support it as well. So we'll reach out, Nicole. I'll forward you this email that, again, just came in. We'll reach out to one of the lawmakers behind this bill and we'll get them on to talk about it. How does that sound? She's not paying attention to me. She's like, okay, that sounds great.
Hi, this is muted. Yes,
no, but I just wanted to update you guys on that because that just came in and that's been an issue we've talked about quite a bit. Okay, before we dip outside of Washington State, get an update on what's happening in higher education. We have warned you guys. We've been warning you to protect your retirement portfolio against risk because there are all these indicators. I mean, a lot of people looking at the stock market, oh, it's performing well, but there's all these other indicators that Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, when he comes on the show every week, has been talking about. From, you know, the debt, credit card debt that people are racking up and then not paying, to what's happening or going to happen in the commercial real estate market. There have been predictions that the commercial real estate market is going to burst. And that's why Zach Abraham says he and his team are watching all these little things that might not seem relevant to you. They might not seem like a big deal on their own, but it is really a row of dominoes that is setting up the U.S. economy to fail.
You know, that's one of the reasons that we're just kind of looking at this market and looking at all these people talking about a great economy. And it's not that it's so bad, but there's just so many structural issues coming to a head at one time. And the market is clearly not paying attention. Mainstream media is clearly not paying attention. And I think it's kind of part and partial to us as a culture now. Why does everybody feel confident about the economy? There's one reason. It's the stock market. And that's all anybody's looking at. Right. And you're just like, OK, well, just so you guys know, the prices you're seeing in the stock market are ridiculous.
Yeah. So it's really about just being prepared so that you're not caught flat footed when we do have. And I hope that it is not the case, but there are so many indicators pointing to an economic downturn next year. It's what Zach's been saying on the show every week. So making sure you're not caught flat footed, that you are managing your retirement portfolio against risk. You can listen to Zach's weekly radio show, KnowYourRiskRadio.com, and hear about Bulwark Capital Management's risk management strategy. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, the Harvard president is going to keep her job, I guess, for the time being. There have been, of course, calls for, well, UPenn's president resigned, as did the head of their board, MIT, Harvard presidents, because of their disastrous congressional testimony, where they basically refused to condemn calls for the genocide of Jewish people on college campuses. I think the heat had been mounting the most against Harvard's president, Claudine Gay, but the school's governing board said, and they just met last night, said that they're just they're fending off all these calls for her to be dismissed. And I don't know if that's a permanent decision from them or if they're still pondering it and they're just not going to oust her for now. But while that's happening, there's been this other story, and I actually think it was Christopher Rufo, who he's such an interesting guy because he was like a former Seattle City Council candidate and a filmmaker, and he just rose to national fame. And he broke a story on the fact that Claudine Gay has all these accusations against her for plagiarism. This is from the Washington Free Beacon. Quote, this is definitely plagiarism. Harvard University President Claudine Gay copied entire paragraphs from others' academic work and claimed them as her own. So you have kind of these two tracks of controversies for her. One, what happened, you know, what's been happening at Harvard, what happened at the congressional hearing, and then two, some ample evidence. And I went and reviewed some of the paragraphs that they were comparing from her work and other work. And I mean, it is. It's full sentences, paragraphs that are just verbatim. And she's trying to dismiss it as, oh, it just wasn't properly cited, but it's clear that it was just plagiarism. So you have these two tracks of things going on. The pressure is going to continue to be on her to resign. I don't know if she's going to, but I wanted to update you because the board was meeting last night. But meanwhile, do you remember we played, so the UPenn president who ended up resigning, we played a clip of her congressional testimony that really went viral, this specific clip where she's being questioned. Nicole, you want to play part of that?
At Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment.
Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's code of conduct when it comes to bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
Yeah. So that continues to go on. But remember what I said yesterday? If you replaced Jewish, with any other like class of people, that we wouldn't, you know, there'd be this whole swath of the left that would never even consider, I mean, tolerating answers like that. Never. So what did somebody do on the internet? Well, they used AI, which AI is just getting a little scary good, to create a version of that video where Elise Stefanik, who's doing this, the questioning, does use other groups of people in place of Jewish. And I mean, when you listen to it, it's kind of hard to argue that the answers would have been much different if this is how it actually played out.
At Penn, does calling for the genocide of black and brown people violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
I am asking specifically calling for the genocide of LGBTQ people. Does that constitute bullying or harassment?
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Muslim people is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer. Yes, Ms. McGill.
Yeah. If that is what had happened, any of those groups were the subject of those questions and that congressional testimony, the people who are trying to support individuals like Liz McGill, trying to support individuals like Claudine Gay, they would not be so eager to support them. And that just exposes the hypocrisy of the entire situation. Okay, before we get to questions and comments, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Down 37 pounds, lost that weight before my wedding, which I'm so glad I did. You know, I gained much of that during the pandemic, and it just wasn't weight my body should have been holding on to. And so Eastside Weight Loss Clinic gave me the tools I needed to know what to eat in the right portions to drop the excess weight quickly, and then the tools I needed to be able to keep it off without feeling like I'm on a miserable lifelong diet. So if you've been thinking about it, do what I did, what so many other viewers of the podcast have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. No counting calories, no prepackaged meals, no strenuous workout routine, no drugs or injections. Again, it's just teaching you a new way to look at food, to consume food. And I'll tell you, it's been pretty easy to keep the weight off. All right, questions and comments from the live stream on Inslee in the media and them deciding who is a legitimate reporter or not. And we're not going to let people we don't think are legitimate reporters in, even if that means there's no reporters in the room. Rachel says, they forget they work for us. Remember, he called those who wouldn't submit to the jab walking bioreactors. Yeah. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. I never thought Inslee was very bright, but he's certainly a master at deflecting and obfuscating. Sad that the mainstream media lets him continually get away with it. He is a master of sort of talk you out of time is what I call it. Where when we would do interviews, he would just like no breath in between. It's like, okay, well, they gave me 10 minutes to do this interview, and he just took up 8 minutes of it with that answer. On the teacher for the Seattle Public School District with this long track record of completely inappropriate activism, Slonomo says, if the president of UPenn has to step down, why doesn't Ian Galosh? Good question. I mean, yeah, those are two very different types of wrongdoing. But H says, this teacher is dangerous. I imagine the kids that are in his class turn out to be in trouble with the law. He is teaching hate and violence. And that was my whole issue with his behavior back in 2020, is as soon as he showed the kids it was appropriate to treat the media that way, they went after the media. They were leaving those cameras alone until Ian Galosh, as the adult in the room, quote unquote, because he's not acting like an adult. As soon as he turned on the media, they turned on the media. That's an example of the influence that he has over those kids. Lolly Wilson says, the principal allows this in their school. Wow. Shocking that those posters are up at the school. Just shocking. Because what if you had teachers even doing like pro-Israel posters or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. I mean, when you allow one, you have to allow others. And this slippery slope idea, I think, is in play.
I'm with you. I don't know how you go to school if you're Jewish and no. think that that's acceptable. And yeah, it's pretty unreal.
Mortifying. Okay, you want to mm-hmm. continue? Greg?
Where are we, Greg? Mm-hmm. Parents and taxpayers need to take control of the schools and schoolrooms back from socialists and even communists. I mean, he said, I'm a communist.
I'm a communist.
From communist school districts and teachers. Let me be perfectly clear that there is no act of terrorism by anyone anywhere that should be tolerated at all.
Yeah. Brett Hammond says, insanity. So glad I don't have children. I'd end up in jail. All right, on Marco Elias's trip to Finland.
Okay, let me go with that. So Michael and Dean both had similar comments. That's why I put them together. The Navy calls trips like that boondoggles. They are better. There are better uses of taxpayer dollars. And Rick Johnson said the word for the Finland trip is boondoggle at taxpayer expense.
So. Yeah. Sergeant Pickles, the Finns I met and in general are logical and pragmatic people, something our leadership has none of.
Leah. Brandy's cursor's covering it.
Oh, it sucks, doesn't it?
Leah, but the police can't even pursue drunk drivers.
Yeah. Ronald Woman the second, require retraining for all Washington drivers and pass the police pursuit initiative. Yes. I wonder if and when that police pursuit initiative to restore reasonable police pursuits is going to be handed in. Does it have enough signatures? Because the clock is ticking. December 12th, they got till the end of the year to turn the rest of those initiatives in. I wonder if we'll hear some news on that anytime soon. Anyway, it's 106. Okay, I didn't have a good sanity check for today, so we're just going to skip it.
Yeah.
Nicole said she'd put one in for me, and then I got there, and there's nothing there. So I'm just going to blame Nicole on it. The sanity check is you can't have teachers like Ian Golash.
Yes.
That's insane, okay? Mm-hmm. That is insane. And it is setting up future generations for absolute failure. One other thing I'll say about that. I did some poking on Ian Golash's Facebook page and found what appears to be his father's Facebook page. And his father has all these posts about how saying he's a communist. I'm a communist. Activism, just like his son. It is generational. Like father, like son, like teacher, like students. So if you don't think that that's going to rub off on some of those kids, you are sadly, sadly mistaken. That would be insane to think otherwise. See? Came up with a sanity check.
Well done. Woo!
You're welcome. That has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Remember, I did drop a link in the show, live show, for how you can sign up for that Dispatch event if you want to come and say hi and hear about some politics. It'll be fun. Nice thing to do on a Thursday. And in Bellevue, nonetheless. You can make it into a dinner evening with someone you like. And if I'm there alone, then you guys can pretend to be my plus one. All right, that's it. See you back on the live show tomorrow at noon.